tells us that it's time to talk gardening.
Do every season, and our seasons are changing right now.
They are changing.
As we know.
In fact, today's a day that I'm really glad that I'm in the studio instead of out gardening.
Oh, boy.
We have
Sally here this morning. Sally Boivera is here.
I've been trying to get Sally to come on for quite a while, but she is one busy gardener in the summer. She's producing food for the whole community.
So, everybody's eating that good stuff.
I know. And so what we're going to talk about today is, based on both of our experiences this summer, what did we learn? Anything new in our gardens this year for the three of us? Because, Dan, you are a gardener as well. What did we learn in this crazy, cool, wet, but typical? I mean, I think it's really important to recognize that this is typical this year. So, Sally, start us out. Anything you learned?
I think that's a great point. We need to record what we learned this year so that we know in a future cold, wet season. Not that we can predict at the beginning of the season when we're ordering our varieties or
deciding what we're going to put in.
But I learned that this weather, the adequate rainfall grows some delicious lettuce and potatoes.
I haven't dug my potatoes yet, so.
I think having adequate rainfall for those of us with inadequate irrigation, like myself, is really a wonderful thing. The main thing that I learned in the early spring, and I'm going to remember this in future years, I'm not going to rely so much on my last year's seeding calendar. I'm really going to observe the weather conditions of the current season more. I really jumped the gun, I think, on trying to till and plant this year. And had I been more patient, I think that the tilth of the soil would have benefited from a couple of two more weeks, really, later than last year for the initial tillage and planting, and my plants would have been happier to get a start in warmer soil, even though the calendar said it was time.
I think that's a huge lesson that I have to keep learning over and over. I guess I don't really learn it, because in the spring it's like, oh, I want to get my plants in, and the weather's nice, and oh, big deal, the soil's a little bit cooler than I know it should be. But I think you're right. I would also take that even a little bit further. Rather than looking at the calendar, is to observe and create your own calendar of what are you noticing. Like Art Jess used to say, when the dandelions are blooming is a sign that the soil is warmed enough that then you know that nature, it's not the calendar that's telling you, but nature's calendar is telling you that the soil is ready to be worked and whatnot. So
yeah, and that kind of reminds me of something I observed, which is that the plants will catch up. So
they
whether
do.
You wait for the dandelions to catch up on their natural cycle, or you use your own internal patience and plant your crops, they will catch up, even if they go in later, and they will be probably better for it going into the warmer soil and
I know
soil
it's
that
a little,
hasn't clumped.
It's a little frustrating. You plant plants thinking, oh, these are going to be way ahead of the other ones. Frequently is not the case.
No.
They catch up.
No, and this year actually was my best year for flowers, flowering things. It was a terrific year, and you know, my schedule is a little bit different maybe because I come up here in late May for a couple of weeks or a week and a half, and then I go back to Oregon for a couple of weeks, and then I come back up. And so I plant everything, prepare the soil in late May, find somebody who's kindly going to water things a little bit, and then we come back, and then my wife looks, oh, there's a garden growing in our
house. Nice.
How nice. But this year, the mock orange, the lilac, and even the tulips all came out about the same time, and they were brilliant and full and really intense. And in other years, like last year, for example, everything was much later, or actually much earlier, and was almost dead by the end of, or, you know, the flowers were about gone by the end of May. This year, it was very, very different, like you were saying.
I think all of those, three of those plants that you mentioned, all of them have roots that are, and they sit in the ground for the winter. And so I would guess all of them were affected somehow by the winter. And so whether that was a dose of coldness that it got, or I don't know, but I'm guessing that. And so that's something to consider. Are you, you know, the annuals that we plant in the spring definitely are going to respond differently than those plants that have our perennials that we've got.
Right. So, right.
Interesting. My flowers actually did amazingly well this year too. It's been very interesting for me to watch what plants have done okay without the sun. Like, I had beautiful delphiniums, but what happened, and this is something that I observed a lot, is the flowers were beautiful, but the plant turned yellow. I found this year things that I normally would have thought, oh, that's a nitrogen deficiency. I've come to the conclusion it wasn't nitrogen. They were cold.
Me too.
Lots of yellowing. Did you find that there was yellow plants?
I observed that in my collard greens, but not my kale. Mm-hmm. And the beds were treated the same with the same compost and the same fertilizers. And so that's something I'm interested in anymore.
I at least at this point, I've come to the conclusion that a lot of my yellowness was not necessarily nutrient. The truth of the matter is it could have been nutrient related, but somehow the access, the moisture, the heavy moisture, whatever, allowed the plant not to access those nutrients that were obviously there.
And the soil temperature can have an effect on the ability of the plant to take up certain nutrients.
Yeah, which gets into that whole complex thing. As you know, we used to think, oh, if the nutrients are there, the plant can get it. That's not the case. There's all sorts of factors that you got to consider in. So,
and sometimes too much rain washes things away.
It leaches. It leaches things. Yes, that's right.
And speaking of kale, my kale was screaming this year. I think people's kale did really well. Yeah. It's a good kale year.
Which is a cool weather crop, which I think it's good for us to be prepared to have crops that are going to grow in this weather.
Absolutely.
Which could lead us into, are there any particular varieties, Sally, that stood out for you this year that you would think are great varieties to always kind of have in your back pocket?
Maybe to bank on these varieties. And I like to try a few gambles, too, every year, or more than a few. But the ones that did really well this year in this cold, wet season were, for peas, Shelling Peas, the Green Arrow.
Yes.
It's a variety I love, and it did wonderfully. My calendula, I love growing calendula, and I could have a calendula farm. I had some in the high tunnel and some outside just because I wanted to be able to pick it even if it was rainy. And actually, the bed outdoors did far better, and I think maybe that was the adequate rainfall. But all calendula varieties I had, I don't have the names here, did really well.
That's a great cool weather. That's a fail-safe flower for our climate,
I
believe. Yeah.
I love making things from it and putting it on salads. For cabbage, I will just say generally that my red cabbage did better than my green, and that might have more to do with root maggot pressure. And then I did try an onion. I say every year I won't try onions, and this would have been a good year not to in my garden because I had very little bulbing except for a red variety that another Haynes gardener recommended. I believe it was called Red River. And that was the only one of the four that I tried bulbed. And I just had them out in the ground, no cover. So
On that point yesterday, I was just in somebody's garden here in town that had onions that were 4 inches big. Yeah.
Wow.
So what happens to me is I feel the same way. It's like, oh, I'm going to quit growing onions. They might never turn out very good. And then I'll go to somebody's garden and I'll see these incredibly beautiful onions and I'll say, well, if they can do it, I can. I'll tell you what her trick was. Well, maybe it wasn't a trick, but what worked was she planted them probably about a foot and a half, 18 inches apart, and then she took barley mash, the brewery mash, and put it in between. And it worked for her this year, so that might be something that somebody wants to try. I'm going to try that next year and see if that works. So, a couple varieties that I found for me was I was turned on to two broccoli varieties that did better than any other ones this year, and they're Arcadia and Bellstar. Beautiful, huge heads and great shoots afterwards. So those two have really worked well for me. And beans, you know, beans are really iffy on a year like this. But my Fortex beans, which is a pole bean, did amazingly well, both outside and inside a hoop house. So that's one that, much to my surprise, I would recommend for if you're going to try to do beans in our climate. And also, I grow Maasai beans because I grow them inside, but I find them to be mold resistant. That's why I grow Maasai, which is an issue for beans here. Let's see, any other varieties? For corn growers, I learned something. I am getting corn this year. It's just coming in now, which is kind of late. But the early sun glow was like almost 2 weeks earlier than the others. Mm-hmm. So if you're a corn grower, based on this year's experience, I think I could recommend the early sun glow. And that's one that's sold locally, which is kind of nice that seed is sold locally. So...
Speaking of greenhouse crops, for the tomato growers, I don't grow corn, but I like to try different tomatoes every year. And this year I put a lot of effort into a lot of moldy plants. But the two varieties that I have gotten a few fruits from are Oregon Spring and Sun Gold. Every year I will try both of those plus... six or seven others.
Yeah, I found Oregon Spring to be kind of a fail-safe one. I don't like the taste of that one quite as much as I like other ones. One of my standbys is Bush Steak. That's one that, and that it only comes from one place. You can only get that one at Burpees, but that's been my fail-safe tomato. And I kind of do the same thing. I always try a few other ones. And Mighty Sweet is another one that is a good one. But I must say, that one didn't do quite as well this year as last year, so maybe that's a warmer weather crop. One thing I wanted to talk about that I think is interesting this year that I noticed is I normally plant all of my root maggot-loving crops early in the season when I plant everything. And I had some other people gardening in my garden this year, and they planted the turnips like late June. And it's the first time ever in my garden I have had turnips without root maggots. And they did no cover, anything like that. So I'm taking the lesson from that is that the root maggot flies were flying early in the season. And by the end of June, they were not flying around and infesting. So another reason to not panic and get all your crops in the third week of May. Well, that's my week to plant.
I observed some emergence of the root maggot fly in May in the warmer spots because we did have a little bit of sunny weather. Yeah. And all it takes for them to emerge is the soil temperatures to warm just enough in the first few inches. And they can go on emerging for many weeks.
Yeah, they do.
It's the only consideration. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I still like to use crop rotation.
Right.
And
covering if it's new soil. Covering, if you cover an area that possibly has root maggots in it from last year, then you're creating a possible little haven for them to be under that cover. But if it's new soil, or not new soil, if it's soil that you know that there's no root maggots in, I think it's advantageous to cover as well. And it can go on. I think that I would say it would be late May or late June before, based on this year's experience, before I would feel like it was safe to plant.
I think we should try later and later plantings of some of these susceptible brassica crops and see, because a lot of these things are crops we want to put in our root cellar anyway, so a later harvest, post-emergence, we'll just try not to panic in the early season.
And even broccoli. I mean, broccoli, you couldn't do that with cauliflower, I don't believe, but broccoli I think you could plant late, and you're going to get a late crop most years. So, yeah, I think we've said many times this morning, I guess the moral of the story is don't panic in the spring. I mean, we're saying this in August. It's like, now wouldn't be so bad to have some late crops coming in.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Right. Especially if it's a beautiful September or something.
Yeah. Don't panic. It's so, organic.
Yeah. Are you telling us it's going to be a nice
No, but
September?
You never know.
I hope you're right.
All right. Well, Sally and Mardell, thanks so much for coming
Thank
in.
You.
And love the garden conversation. It was really great to be here in person for that.
Yeah.
So,
well, thanks
nice
for having
to
us.
See you
yeah,
guys.
Thanks
Absolutely.
For having us. And happy gardening, everybody.